So, welcome everybody to the ongoing class of meditation. For those of you who have come to the introduction to meditation class, that is being held in the room to my right. And our teacher over there is Natalie, very powerful teacher. Unfortunately, she's got no students yet. So I, out of compassion, was going to volunteer to go over and learn from her. Is that a good idea? She's hiding in the back there now. Okay. Anyway, that's for those of you who are starting the introduction to meditation class. This is the ongoing class. The main difference is we do try and teach a little bit more deeply about meditation. And when we do actually start the meditation, we meditate for 45 minutes. And that 45 minutes, you serious, Sir Lawrence? Okay, very, very good, excellent. Lawrence has been coming for years and years and years. That's very kind of him. You going as well? Yeah, okay, go stand. Excellent. Okay, so let's get down to business. Meditation should be the easiest thing in the world for a person to do. It only becomes difficult when a person decides to put in effort and try and get something. Meditation is very different than what we do in the world. In the world, when we want to achieve something, we work hard, we study, we push ourselves. But that only gives you more what we call stress in life. And instead of like stressing out, meditation is in a totally different direction. It's a strange thing, but you find if you just sit there and be still, often the meditation gets much more deeper. This is not through effort, it's just through the nature. A flower doesn't decide out of will to bloom one day. It's just when the conditions arrive, that's just what happens. It's a natural progress. That's the same with meditation. One of the best similes which I've given, and I keep on repeating it, is the simile of the thousand-petal lotus. And the reason why the thousand-petal lotus opens up is because it receives the warmth and the light of the sun. And in this simile, the warmth and light of the sun refers to the kindness, an important contribution to meditation, and the awareness, those two working together. The kindness and the awareness, that is what usually makes the meditations to get very peaceful, like the lotus opens up. It's not you going anywhere or doing anything or going to a different place of existence. All you're doing is going deeper inside of yourself, inside of what's already here. So you don't need to go and get something. You just need to allow some things to open up, to let go, to disappear. And that's actually the path of meditation. Even so many years ago, when I started talking about the very deep states of meditation, what I call the what the Buddha called the jhanas, they are not attainments. Those are stages of letting go, deep stages of letting go. The more you let go, the closer you are to those extremely beautiful, wonderful, helpful states. So that is kind of letting us know how these things actually happen. And in order to emphasize that, not just with similes of the thousand-petaled lotus, similes like the, the donkey and the carrot. I just went over to Sri Lanka and to Thailand to teach meditation retreats, and that was one of the stories which people remembered the most, the donkey and the carrot. If you haven't heard that one yet, here it comes. if you have heard it, here it comes anyway. So how does a donkey catch a carrot? First of all, how do you get donkeys to pull carts? You can hit the donkey on the backside, the donkey won't move, it's very stubborn. So instead you tie the stick to the back of the donkey's neck. So the front of the stick is 2 foot in front of the donkey's mouth, a string on the end of the stick, and on the end of the string you put a carrot. So the donkey sees a carrot, moves towards it, but can't ever catch it. Because when the donkey moves, the stick moves, the string moves, the carrot moves. So the carrot's always about 2 foot in front of the donkey's mouth. And very often those donkeys, they try and catch the carrot, they run after the carrot, they put a lot of effort in. But the more effort they put in, does that ever catch the carrot? No, the carrot's always 2 foot in front of the donkey's mouth. And I love that simile because that is so close to our life. You know, sometimes whatever you're chasing in life, whatever you want in life, enough money to retire, you know, enough comfortable home, a nice garden, a nice country, a good country which is kind and generous and fair, so you can have a nice peaceful life. Sometimes you can get very close to that and then something happens and all goes wrong. It's so hard to catch the carrot. But donkeys learned how to catch the carrot. You know where they learned it from? These Saturday afternoon meditation classes, I reckon. Because I told it many times here. The donkey runs hard after the carrot, really hard. And then the donkey learned something which he got from this place. The donkey learned how to stop. That's what the donkey does, it stops. What happens to the carrot? It swings further away from the donkey, really far away. It's usually 2 foot in front of the donkey's mouth. Now it's 4 foot in front of the donkey's mouth. Never been so distant. And some of those donkeys who come here think, oh, just Ajahn Brahm's teachings is rubbish, it doesn't work. You know, you've got to chase after the carrot to go and get it just sitting still. Look, it's gone further away. It does not work. But then something strange happens. Then the carrot starts to swing towards the donkey. It's never happened before. And then it swings towards the donkey. It comes to its usual place, 2 foot in front of the donkey's mouth. But now it's coming up top speed towards the donkey's mouth. And it comes really close to the donkey's mouth on the upswing. And that is where the donkey has to remember the last piece of information. It's not just stopping and being mindful. It's also being kind as well. That's when the donkey has to say to that carrot, carrot, the door of my mouth is open to you. Come in. Without the kindness, the carrot just bounces off the donkey's teeth. Have you ever seen donkey's teeth? They're really big and very strong. That's how you catch carrots. You're running already, you stop, swings away, open your mouth, another carrot in. That's also how we meditate. You've been running all day, all week, some of you all of your life. And now you have the great opportunity to sit still and just allow these things to come to you. The more still you are, the more peaceful you are, the more that the mind energizes. Sometimes you may feel you're getting sleepy, but that is often overcome by developing more energy with joy and happiness, really appreciating what you're experiencing. Sometimes we get bored with whatever we're doing. And people sometimes feel that meditating, watching your breath for half an hour or something, that must be really boring. Can't you get a proper life, Ajahn Brahm, than just watching your breath? But then what actually happens is it's just gorgeous and it's beautiful. It's full of what they call piti sukha. And when that starts to happen, of course you can't get any sloth and torpor, any dullness. You're alert, you're alive, and it's gorgeous. So this is actually what happens after a while. You find the meditation starts to take off. And it becomes, you stop and it gets more and more energized. Why does it get more energy? Where does that come from? Because you're not wasting any energy. You're not chasing things, not wanting things, you're not hoping for things. You're not expecting anything. You're sitting there and just being here. Not wanting anything in the whole world. Just being here. and you go inside where you already are. And the deeper you go inside where you already are, that's like going into the thousand-petal lotus. You stop going places. Then the carrot comes to you. And that's actually how it works. It's amazing when those things start to happen in your meditation. You've heard about these things, you've read about these things, people describe them to you, and now you're just sitting there, and it's happening. And sometimes afterwards we come up and bow and say to Ajahn Brahm, Ajahn Brahm, you were right. Yeah, well, yeah. I was going to say, yeah, of course. Otherwise I wouldn't be teaching. I won't teach you deliberately things which are wrong. But I teach this because this is how Ajahn Chah taught me. His great simile, and then I'll shut up in a moment and we can meditate. His great simile, which of course I never understood when I first heard it. This monastery was a mango orchard. Trees planted by the Buddha, full of mangoes. And you don't need to, you can't climb the tree to get a mango. You can't throw up a stick to get the mango to fall. There's only one way to get the mangoes on those trees, and that's to sit perfectly still underneath the mango tree. Sit perfectly still and open up your hand, and a mango will fall. That's all. Didn't believe that at all when I was a young monk. Later on you found out what a beautiful simile that was. Your job in meditation is to sit perfectly still and open up the door of your heart, the kindness. And then that's where you find the mangoes will fall. All those great states of mind just happen. That's a wonderful thing to observe. So when you're meditating, please don't do effort. Just stay there, restrain. Put like a little bubble around yourself. I'm not going forward, I'm not going back. I'm staying here with beautiful kindness and wait and see how your mind develops. That's the way of Buddhist meditation. Okay, so that's the 15 minutes, the prequel. So now if you'd like to get yourselves into a reasonably comfortable meditation position, if you know how to meditate, the longer you sit, the more comfortable it becomes. Starts off maybe a few aches and pains, but afterwards it gets better and better and better. Great. Got a couple of chairs here, Jacob. So if you'd like to close your eyes. And with your eyes nicely closed, just check your bodily posture first of all. It's always worthwhile doing. I kind of like to almost like play with this to see just how aware I can become of my toes. So why do that? Toes don't usually cause you any problems, but it's just a little exercise to show what mindfulness is and how when it's associated with kindness you can get really aware, so aware you can almost feel every toe and relax your toes. That's what I'm doing now. Five toes in each foot, feeling them all. and feeling the sensations in them get looser. There's no tightness. I'm not holding it tense. It's like every one of those toes is soaking in just a warm, warm water. It feels good. Number one, it gives me confidence I can do this. Number two, it shows me the benefits of this bodily relaxation. And I go further from the toes to the feet. I haven't paid much attention to my feet for a while, but now I can feel the soles of the feet, the heels, the uppers. And this is my vehicle which I use. Yes, in the morning time you go on an arms round here, even if it's a bit drizzly, we still walk in bare feet on the road, on the pavement. So I care for my feet. Not just as a word, but I really mean it. Right now, I wish my feet to relax, to open up, expand. You don't need to be afraid of anything. No anxiety in the feet, or the equivalent where everything tenses up. Let everything get loose and easy. Every muscle I can be aware of to relax. So nothing is being pulled tight, nothing is being squashed. And I know the feeling. It's when the feet are relaxed. It's kind of feeling, why don't I do this all the time? It's pleasant. And of course any injuries down there will be healed very quickly. Seems that all my feet and toes are just balanced, at ease. That's kind of how they should be, kind of. And then I continue this meditation to go to some areas which are more vulnerable. Things like my ankles. I know that people do twist their ankles. It causes lots of aches and pains for a long time. I'm now going to be aware of my ankles and relax them with kindness. So I have to be aware first so I can feel them. And then I know that it's kindness I'm doing because those ankles, they do relax. They start to feel even more at ease. It's wonderful just to be able to do that. To know what kindness is, to spread that onto your ankles and feel them respond, becoming really relaxed. They haven't felt so good for hours. And I go from my ankles to my calves and my legs and muscles and the bones and skin and ligaments and stuff. I don't really know everything which is in there. I just pick up any sensations in that area. To know it, be kind, and feel everything relax. I can feel a little tight knot, a tiny knot of muscles in my left leg. Just focus on that, but give it kindness. Just like when you ask me to give loving kindness to a person who's really sick. You do that, give kindness, even to a little baby. And you know, just the kindness which you give, you know how to do this. And that baby relaxes, becomes more at ease. It's exactly what that little knot of muscles has now done. It's got really at ease, so it's just can hardly feel it now. So I go further up to my knees. Because of the way we move, the way we walk fast or sit, sometimes our knees do get overused, overworked, not relaxed enough, and because they work so hard, they can get sore or in pain. Now it's my job, in a good position. I don't have to move you knees, just need to teach you how to relax more deeply. What I mean by that is just when I loosen off any tension, any fear-generated tightness, I can feel my knees kind of open up, get more loose. The things aren't just held tightly. Things are kind of open and free and expanding. So that tightness starts to dissipate. I do that as much as I can with both knees. I don't stop until it feels like it's as relaxed as it can possibly get. And then I move on to my thighs. I usually go quickly through my thighs, there's nothing much going on there usually. But I check anyway. And eventually I can just feel all the muscles in the thighs. Everything's okay. So I can relax it just a tiny bit more. And then move on to my buttocks. All I want to do now is just to make sure the pressure is evenly spread over the cushion. There's feelings there, the pressure. And all I need to do is to even it out. And then I notice as I move up to other parts of my body, that sensation will disappear all by itself. So I go up to my waist. And what always makes my waist more comfortable is just if I now just straighten my back, just stretch it. And it gives me a rush of endorphins in my blood around the waist. Feels good. And it also gives me this really strong posture. Then I go up my body, up the digestive tract, from the bottom of the torso to my tummy, the stomach, making sure that everything is in a good position. If I feel any tightness, any kind of feeling which might be negative, I will stay there, at that feeling. And don't go on from there until I can give that part of my digestive tract so much kindness, that feeling which I noticed starts to get less and less and less. till I get to my stomach. Relax that. Further sweep up the body to my lungs. This is this instrument doing the breathing. I give trust to my lungs. You know how to breathe and how much oxygen is needed. I won't control you. I'll just be a friend with you. Sometimes, halfway through the body sweeping, I just get interested in things like the lungs. Don't want to go any further. Just straight away aware of the breathing. It's probably better to do the exercise fully. So I go up to my shoulders, relax them. Again, I visualize my shoulders as being these bunches of muscles on either side of the neck. I imagine them, they're being pulled apart. They're stretched, they're tight. And I imagine just both ends of each group of muscles being released. They're not held tight, they're not stretched. They're loose. I don't know, I don't care what it looks like. I notice what it feels like. It feels comfortable. And that was my aim. I just moved down the arms. The upper arms, the elbows, the lower arms, wrists. Making sure that all the muscles in all those arms are cared for, relaxed. And then I always like to get to my hands. And I ask my hands, are you comfortable? Fingers, are you comfortable? And I listen to what my mind says. If I hear that they need to be moved, I will move them. This is a way of being mindful and kind by asking the right question of your own body parts. And when you get an answer, just follow it. Follow the answer. Your body is teaching you. Don't think that you know better than the body. And then go back up to your shoulders and your neck. This time of the year seems to have some sort of allergies, hay fevers or something which is blooming. So I do feel more guitar than usual in my esophagus. So all I need to do now is just relax everything there. Not to worry, not to try and get rid of things, just to relax to the max. And then lastly, I go to the front of my face. It's the muscles around the eyes, the nose and the mouth. And learn just how to relax all those muscles so nothing is held tightly. It's not controlling the muscles, it's letting them go. Disengaging from always trying to force your face to look like this or look like that. I just want my face to relax to the max. No tightness anywhere. I want to have mindfulness of those muscles. It's easy to learn by trial and error how to relax them all. And I've relaxed my whole body. If there's parts I've missed out, and if they're important, then focus on them. And also relax them until you can leave them alone. Then I do this awareness of my whole body. As much as I can, feel this body as a unit. And when I do this, always the same thing happens. It starts to feel delightful. I allow my mind to focus on that very pleasurable delight of relaxation. My body feels at ease. That's a very comfortable experience. No aches, no pains. Everything at ease, relaxed to the max. And I notice every time again the body relaxes even more. The delight of relaxation automatically just takes me into a deeper state of physical peace. Then after a couple of minutes, it's time to go to the mind. And usually I find the best way to go from the body to the mind is to ask how peaceful I am. I feel the peace. That's what I'm focusing on now. How peaceful are you, Ajahn Brahm? What does that peace feel like? What makes it stronger and deeper? And so usually at this point, I see the importance of just letting the past vanish. It's not important for me anymore. I always know that right now is the place where my future is being made. So if I care for my future, if I'm a responsible leader, I'll put more attention in the present, the place where my future is made. And that brings me more peace when it's not distracted by memories of the past or thoughts of the future. And just now, happy to be here. And this is not something you do, just something which develops naturally. From peace in this present moment, you normally just go deeper into this peace. But now it deserves a better name. It deserves the name of silence, where you refrain from giving things names. You're not thinking, you're not taking notes, you're not working out all the theories. You're just being quiet. You're listening, you're feeling, you're being, not trying to philosophize. This is usually as far as I go with the guided meditation. As I speak it, I do it. It gets a bit too powerful to allow me to speak. The next time I speak will be close to the end of the meditation.
is getting close. To the end of the meditation. How do you feel? How peaceful is your mind? How happy, joyful is it inside? How does your body feel? I'm soon going to ring the gong 3 times. At the end of the 3rd ringing of the gong, please come out from the meditation. There we go. Yes, okay. Oh, thank you, Al. Happy birthday to your son yesterday. Here we go. 6 questions here. First question, where does the energy come from when we meditate? Is it from within us? Certainly. The thing is that the energy is not wasted, it's not dissipated. It comes from within and stays from within. That's where we feel like we're really waking up, alive and joyful. Next question. My best meditations happen when I'm not even trying. Yes, but those are rare. I cannot intentionally recreate the not even trying conditions. Any advice how to do that? That's the easiest one. You don't do anything. You don't try and recreate anything. You just pause, you stop. Even the idea of just thinking the word stop, restrain, let go. All those sorts of things. Just imagine you're the donkey and you're not running anymore. You just stand still. Recently during meditation, oh, this is a strange one. Really, recently during meditation, my sexual desire becomes very strong. I've been meditating for a few years and this is the first time it happens. How to handle that skillfully? Thank you. Maybe what I could suggest is imagine the sexual desire is out there somewhere and you're not even close to it, you're watching it from a distance. You're not involved in it. And look upon it like a fire. There's nothing you really want to get close to. Don't try to get it back in there and try and stop it, that's more just doing stuff. And let that sexual desire just eventually vanish, burn out. And instead just enjoy the peace, the stillness. The peace is much more delightful than sexual desire. From Indonesia, how do you handle boredom during meditation when the mind keeps seeking for distraction because it feels unbearable to face the running thoughts inside? You don't need to have running thoughts when you're meditating. Before you meditate, don't be around a coffee table and arguing about all sorts of things before you meditate. Even a few minutes before you meditate, try doing some walking meditation. You know, that's one of the reasons why before we start meditating, I usually do a 15-minute talk about something. you know, something to do with meditation. And one of the reasons I take the opportunity to talk for 15 minutes is to take a person who may have just rushed off the bus, getting here in time, avoided the rain, and then they're going to meditate soon. You want to slow them down, to ease them from the busyness of life to the quietness of meditation. And then what usually happens is that the running thoughts inside, they don't run so fast. And because they don't run so fast, they're easy, just to allow them to cease. Don't give them importance, don't give them value. They're just like spam. They're like the waves on the lake, and we're looking for the lake to be perfectly still. So I know that sometimes, years ago I gave the simile, like the thoughts are like the waves on a lake. When you see those waves, you put your hand in there and try and smooth them all over. That just makes more waves. Just leave them alone, they'll stop by themselves, especially when you don't give them importance. And then when they stop, you're not wasting energy anymore. That's when your energy starts to really get strong. And that's when the joy starts to come up. You're enjoying the meditation. From Germany. When meditating, my body and mind are tense and tight due to chronic pain. Do I put my awareness on my breath or my body to calm down and get peace? Patience gets harder, please help. Actually, I would put my attention on the body and calm it down and get some peace. If it's chronic pain, if it's located one place in your body, then you can focus on that part of the body. Just give it lots and lots and lots of kindness. See how much you can relax it. And sometimes it's amazing just what was once a chronic pain, you just go deep inside of it, just let it be, not fighting it. What's happening is the two parts of pain, the mental reaction and the physical pain, what the Buddha called the two thorns, you know, the reaction pain and the real pain, the reacting type of the pain disappears. So you're already cutting off about 80% of the intensity of pain, and just by not reacting at all. And just go right inside of it if at all possible. And in the middle of the pain, there is no pain. So it's good to put your awareness on the body and calm it down, first of all, as much as you possibly can. And just keep going inside. Extra question if time allows. I'm going through these questions really quickly. Dear Ajahn, I have an addiction, and so many times I am exhausted and fed up of everything and want to throw in the towel. Please advise. Thank you for your wonderful meditations. Of course, throwing in the towel just doesn't help at all. It just keeps the pain even more and the disappointment. And somebody told me the other day, I think when I was in, again, I think it was Singapore, and they were saying they were dealing with people with addictions, and please advise them, if you do have an addiction and you, through a moment of weakness, you fail and you get taking that addictive substance again, please don't feel bad about yourself. Think of how many days you've been without that addiction, and then start again. Start again just restraining. Every time, just because you lose once doesn't mean that you are a loser and you can never achieve the freedom from the addictions. You keep on going. And next time you can be stronger. Next time you can be smarter. Next time you can see if you can put yourself in situations where those addictions are just too distant from you. You can't just grab them straight away. There's so many things you can do. But because one of the biggest reasons for addiction, as I know and I've been told, is that people don't think they're up to it. They think they're not worth it. They think it's too difficult for them. But you find that that sense of ability and worth gets stronger and stronger and stronger the more days you can do without the addiction. And don't just think you failed once. That means that you're a failure. In many days, many hours you've been without those addictions, you've resisted them. You're going to get stronger and stronger. And that will encourage you. And everybody else, it may be your friend, maybe someone you love, they'd gone for a week, you know, without having that, following that addiction. Yeah, well done. And have a party for them. Take them out for a nice meditation retreat or something, and whatever it is. And when you celebrate, you know, their goodness, the fact they've restrained for such a long time, wonderful. That encourages them. It makes the battle not so lonely that other people are right behind them, cheering for them. So anyway, that's one thing you can do. Of course you're exhausted, but you're more exhausted if you follow the addictions. So you resist them, it's hard, tough, but you can do it as many people do. And that's brilliant to see. Okay, is there any questions from the floor? Not from the floor, from the chairs. From the cushions, the stools. Is there? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I had an actual question this time.
Oh, sorry, yes, okay, yeah, come on.
But see, last time I asked a question, the Dharma Hall got struck by lightning, so...
Ha, 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 you're safe today.
That's good. I was asking, Ajahn Hasapanya was talking about the reliability of external forces.
Oh, yes.
Then the lightning hit the building. But I picked up on something really interesting in the meditation where you use the words leadership and presence.
Yes.
In the same sentence.
Yes.
And what I'm thinking is that, and this is the thinking is the problem, right? So we've got... there's a lot of things happening in society at the moment, including the referendum on The Voice.
Yes.
So, and I must admit, I've been in a real quandary with this because I look back on my family history and the number of generations we've been here, and I'm sure there's some, you know, things that went to the grave that were left unsaid. And then I think about that trajectory, and then I meditate and I come to that place of stillness, which is, you know, there is no past, there is no future, it's boundless, it's formless, it's beautiful. How do we, and you use the word leadership with presence, so how do we take that leadership of presence to look at, like to have right view when we look at the issues we're asked to comment on or put a vote forward on in society?
Indeed. It is usually, if you're in the present moment a lot, again, this is where the future is made right now. You can never know exactly how it's going to turn out, how the future is going to work out. But you do have in the present moment a sensitivity to, you know, what's right and what's wrong, what's fair, what's moral, what isn't. And that's something which you're not sort of supporting with logic and reason and what other people have said. You feel this is right. You feel this is not right. And the more you're in that present moment, the more you stay in this moment, the more that becomes very clear what needs to be done, what should not be done. It's a very simple, it's an emotional virtue. And what you feel is good, pure, helpful. And I know that in my position sometimes that people ask these very complex moral questions. And how do I answer? I don't go to the books and do research and find out how it should be. Instead, you just get your mind very still and peaceful and you feel how it should be. And that's what my answer, when people say you have to answer from the heart, and that's what I mean. You access that heart. You might call it intuition, you may call it an emotional truth, I don't know what word you call it, but sometimes you ask that question, you put it in your heart, you're still, you're peaceful, and a good answer always, always comes out. That's what I trust. Did I explain myself well enough?
Yes. Yes, you did.
Okay, good.
I think what you're basically saying is you drop the clinging to the past. You drop the anxiety around the what ifs.
Yeah.
And the two B's, and you just simply come into presence and feel from the heart.
Yeah, and it always works, it seems. It's amazing.
Oh, and because I've got the microphone, Kalyana Friendship Community, or Kind and Friendly Chats, it's on
this
at 5 o'clock, so come and join
us. With the pumpkin and...
Pumpkin and red lentil soup, and it's not spicy.
Yeah.
So,
and that's, from KFC. Not the KFC down the road, the KFC here. Excellent. So, any other questions anyone has while I'm still here? I hope you enjoyed the meditation. This place is getting some more energy up now. When we first built it, it was kind of cold. I'm not talking about temperature, I mean just the spiritual power of the place, but it is getting much more easier to meditate in this place. So sometimes you just sit down there and things start to happen and it gets more beautiful. So hopefully that gets stronger and stronger over the years. Excellent. Okay, so we'll now bow 3 times to virtue, peace and compassion, or Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. And then afterwards, those of you who want to come and ask any other questions of us, I'll be sitting here for a little while. And then at 5 o'clock we have the KFC. Beforehand, if you want some soup. If you have some soup, don't just have soup and then at 5 o'clock go home. That's a bit unfair.
Yeah, cheating, yeah.